All right, I'm here with Mawish Saeed. She is an award-winning fashion and interior designer, best-selling author, cancer survivor, and quantum home biologist. Mawish, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Joel, for having me.
I'm super excited to geek out with you. People that don't know you, you know, I've been following you for the last couple of years, and you work with the top 1% people in New York and all over the world in the interior design world, and you take regular homes and you make them vivacious homes. And then something happened, though. You were diagnosed with cancer, and that changed everything. And so I know you, your story, you pivoted from not only creating beautiful homes, but making homes that are healthy and they resonate at a frequency and a vibration, because you and I both know there's so many things out there like junk light and EMFs and mold that can absolutely wreck your health and bring that vibration down. It's not just the aesthetics that are pleasing, but it's like, how is this home a healthy home? Before we jump into all of that, I just want to know, like, how'd you even get into this world of home design? Like, why was it your mission? Like, this is something I have to do. And to work with the 1%, people don't understand this, but you have some superpower to be able to do that. And I'm just curious, like, how did you gain their trust and get into that world where you're working with the top of the top in that world?
I would say it's totally serendipitous, because it was my entree into New York. I came here through the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I worked in textile conservation. So I'm a, as you say, we're geeking out. I'm a super nerd. And I love history. I love mythology. And honestly, it has been jumping from one thing and one experience to another. I've done so many things. I've worked as a stylist. I've worked as a fashion designer. And interiors was just like a natural thing. I mean, once I started dressing women for their weddings, then I started dressing them for their maternity. And then it's like, oh, can you help me with my kitchen? You have great color sense, and so on and so forth. And by the way, my first interior design project was my store renovation. And I did that in my 20s.
Wow. So I read your book, by the way, best-selling book, Purgatory to Paradise. Go out there and get it if you haven't. It's a How Cancer Helped Me Design My Authentic Life. But you were doing interior design like at an early age. I want to say like 12 years old, like you were really ensconced in this world of interior design. So it's like no accident that you put in this work, and then you're in your 20s, here you are designing your own store. And the next thing you know, you're working with some of the elite people in the world.
Yeah, it's really organic. It's like, who walks in that door once, you know, if you build it, they will come. It's really, I have to say, I'm a living example of following your bliss, in the words of Joseph Campbell, who is one of my favorite authors and philosophers. So I think when you do put yourself out there, you make yourself receptive to whatever comes. And I have to say, it's not a formula. It's really about courage.
Wow. I know also you've pivoted in the last couple of years or so, just with having been diagnosed with cancer during the pandemic, which was probably just a really traumatic time. And I know you're doing a lot of work with people in the cancer world and helping them design not only healthy lifestyles and healthy homes and finding their authentic self. But in your book, you talk about cancer being like one of the best things for you. And you actually talk, and I know a lot of cancer survivors. My mom actually had breast cancer at like 50 years old. And I remember her telling me, Joel, I'm scared. For the first time in my life, I feel like there's a chink in my armor, and that I was rolling around in the world doing my thing, and now I feel like I'm broken. Like somebody attacked me, somebody hurt me, and I don't know how long I have to live. And now she's in her 70s thriving still, but I know just the trauma and everything that happens and the fear that comes with cancer. And you actually said in the book that what if cancer is not the demon, but a symptom of our lack of presence? What if living a life of fear is more dangerous than cancer? Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up and sharing that about your mom. I believe that when I was diagnosed with cancer, it was my doorway to freedom. And the life that I was living, I didn't know was more toxic than the cancer itself. And in my book, I wrote about cancer. I just want to step back for a second and recognize that in the world that we're living in, cancer is villainized in that drama triangle. Cancer is the villain, the doctor is the hero, and you're the victim. And you have to play that role, like, oh my God, this happened to me. It's like, what if it's happening for me? And what if cancer is not the villain? What if the lifestyle that you've been living and the choices that you haven't confronted and the things that you haven't dealt with, what if that's the real villain? What if your lack of presence and your ability to be authentic is the villain? And what if cancer is just a symptom of that imbalance in your life? And yes, we'll get into the practical aspects of how your home can literally kill you or heal you. But on a much more philosophical level, I think it's important to recognize that cancer is not the villain here. And in a lot of ways, you're not the victim either, because you can be your own hero in your own hero's journey. And you can co-create that healing for yourself with your team of doctors, with the other different healing modalities, with the people that are around you to help support you. But you are responsible and you have the agency to basically create that healing for yourself. That's what my book is all about. It's about empowerment.
Yeah. And on that note, you know, so many people might be listening and they might have been diagnosed with cancer and they might even say, yeah, Mawish, like, that's a nice speech to give somebody, like, go and run towards the fear, right? And like, we all know that, right? When anytime we've been knocked down and we've had a huge setback in our life, the only way to get through it is actually to run into the fear, run through it. And that's the only way we grow, we gain wisdom, we become better. How did cancer, how was that the light bulb that switched on for you in the life that you were living, that you were able to take this pain and actually gain so much more clarity, so much more depth in your life, and turn that pain to purpose? And I know just from your relationship, I think you were going with some major relationship issues with a narcissistic husband and who wasn't supportive. And I know it sounds like for you, like, that was the wake-up moment and you couldn't see these things. You were living this life daily, but it wasn't until you got cancer that it actually woke you up and said, this is what's really important. This is what I value. This is who I am.
Well, he wasn't a husband. In a lot of ways, that's probably good. But I have to say, I rooted into the story of Persephone. And like I wrote in my book, I was introduced to her when I was 9 years old. When I fell in love with Greek mythology, and I've designed clothes that are Persephone series and, you know, in that way. But I rooted into that story because, like I wrote in my book, mythology was my guidepost to truth. And Persephone is the goddess of the underworld, and she's kidnapped by Hades and taken down against her will, like I was taken down by cancer and taken into my underworld. And I think in that regard, if I look at that story, Hades becomes her divine lover. He's her husband. He's the one she dances the tango with, like I dance the tango. And I think in that regard, it was like, well, what is this experience, what does this have to teach me? I've been through enough hardship. I've been through other medical scares. And looking back on those things, I've realized that sometimes they were blessings in disguise. So I had the perspective, I'd lived life enough to realize that maybe instead of a knee-jerk reaction, and by the way, I'm not sugarcoating fear and trauma and pain, because I went through all of that. But instead of bypassing and spiritually bypassing that pain, I actually invited it into my home, like Rumi's guest house, and the despair, the malice, that bad feeling, I invited them in like an honored guest in my home and sat with them, because they won't go away. They'll continue knocking at your door. They'll break your door down in order to be heard. So it's important to recognize that that pain has to be addressed. That betrayal has to be addressed. That trauma has to be addressed. And sometimes, like I wrote in my book, you don't put a post-it note over your you know, gas gauge and say, oh, well, I'm going to ignore the fact that I'm running on empty. Like, your car will break down. You won't be able to function. Your body will break down if you continue, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing and not rest and not refuel. So what can we do to refuel ourselves? From a designer's perspective, that's really the question I'm answering.
Can you talk a little bit more about myths? I know there's a chapter in your book that blew me away and was a complete paradigm shift. And you said that myths have been villainized to be what is not true. And the reality is, when you actually understand myths and Greek mythology like you do at such a high level, myths, I think you said, are actually truths. Talk a little bit about that and what people are getting wrong.
Oh, yeah. The common vernacular is, oh, the five common myths for, you know, blowing, you know, whatever it is, your health. Like, that word myth has now been synonymous or made synonymous with a lie. Oh, this lie that we've been told. And I think, again, it's the inversion. It's like, you know, if you have some radical thought about something, you're a conspiracy theorist now. Oh my gosh, let's debunk you of your authenticity. Let's debunk you of your actual intellect and call it a myth. Let's talk about that, because I think mythology, if you look at what the oral story tradition is, the storytelling tradition. Why are podcasts so huge right now? Hi, we are storytellers, and we have been telling each other stories before the written word came along for thousands of years. It's literally hardwired into our biology. So this idea of telling and that our spoken word is so powerful, Joel. And mythology that has been passed down from generation to generation and repeated. And there have been people in certain societies who were known as the ones who remembered, who were able to hold that memory for that culture and for that tradition, and they were honored for it. And I think it's important to recognize that those are the ones that are being attacked by saying, oh, well, that's no longer relevant. And our quest for modernity and our quest for improvement as a human species, we're actually throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Okay. This whole idea of, and again, I talk about it in my book, this divisive manipulation tactic. That's a narcissistic manipulation tactic of either or, either you're with us or you're against us. Well, why is it so binary? Why is life that black and white? And I think it's important to recognize that this mythology is something I grew up with. They were family folklores, stories that were told, passed down from generation to generation. And it's funny because my mom would tell me bedtime stories as a little girl. And then when I was able to read, I'm like, oh my God, they published her stories. She's a genius. So I think it's so interesting. Like, I grew up being fed that soul food, those traditional tales, and each of them parables, they have a wisdom. And I think, you know, if we take them literally, then of course, that never happened. You know, yeah, they're not literal. They're allegorical. They're metaphorical. And I think we have to look upon those things. And that's what I did during my cancers. I was able to take the mythology of Persephone and realize that I was Persephone. We are divine. We have that divine seed within us, and I call them my pomegranate seeds of wisdom. And I even said, what if the pomegranate seeds that she, you know, we're told accidentally ate, what if she willfully ate those seeds? Because they empowered her. They initiated her into these other realms. And I'm talking about her shadow side. I'm talking about the things that we want to put away and hide away in the closet, the clutter. And let's bring that stuff out, because it needs to be seen. It needs to be acknowledged and made, you know, reconciled with and made a part of us. And I think a lot of times we feel like we're not good, that we have to be all good. I mean, that's an angel. That's an angel. We're human. We're meant to have that shadow. And this is our life process. Our life is kind of like our practice run to see what choices we make. And we have, guess what, another day to do it. And I think cancer made me realize, maybe I won't have another day to do it. Maybe this is all I've got. And what choice am I going to make? What choice would you make if you knew you were going to die tomorrow? Would you make different choices? Would you still stay in purgatory? Which is what I talked about. A life lived by default is purgatory. Not living in your paradise. If you're in a rental, for example, and you don't put a hole in the wall because you're afraid that's temporary, you know, I'm going to move and have this other life over here once I amass whatever it is I'm supposed to amass, right? What if you don't have that? What if today's all you've got? Are you not going to put up that beautiful painting that you've been dreaming about? You're going to wait? Why wait? So there's all these layers to it that I applied in a practical sense in my life. I started putting art up that I had been looking at for a decade, and I finally pulled the trigger while I was in cancer treatment, because I'm like, what have I got to lose? What am I waiting for?
I love that. You know, one of my stories, and you know it very well, is, and I saw this in my old 9-to-5 job, is that people would always tell me, man, when I retire, I'm going to move out of state. I'm going to go do this. And I started to take a look back, and I didn't like that. And I didn't want to be trapped in that paradigm. And I thought, asking myself, why can't I move right now? Like, why can't I start living my best life today, right now? Why can't I just move out of state if that's what I really want to do? Why would I wait till I'm 50 to retire, get this pension, and start living my so-called good life? It makes no sense. And losing my job was my purgatory, if you will. And it was what shined a light on me as well. It helped me go, whoa, what am I really being called to? What do I really value? And like you said, if I died tomorrow, would I be like really happy? Would I feel like I died empty and I gave everything I had? And the answer was no. And that was a big pivot for me. So I love what you said. You also talk about this idea. Did you want to say anything on that note?
No, that's okay. Amazing.
You talk about this idea in the book, uncertainty. And you actually say uncertainty is a good thing. Now, here's an interesting thing. A lot of the men I work with, and I help them build unshakable marriages and deeper connection with their kids, I actually tell them, Mawish, you need to be certain that this, you need to walk around in a state of certainty. Like, you know, 100% you're all in, and that this marriage is going to work out, and that you're committed to it. And that, because people that walk around with an attitude of certainty, it's a different state. Their shoulders are back. It's like they're Superman. Their vibration is high. They can take anything. But yet you said, actually, uncertainty is a good thing. Talk to me, why is uncertainty a good thing?
Because it's reality. It's reality. I mean, I can power my way with my mindset and say, you know, yeah, I'm going to live. And I definitely set that intention for myself, because I'm a single mom, and my son was 9 when I was going through cancer. And I definitely made that. I was very certain that I wanted to be around for him. That level of certainty is self-guided. But I'm talking about living with uncertainty when it comes to external forces. Like, I don't know. I mean, I live in New York. There's no guarantee that my view is going to remain the same. There's a building that cropped up and blocked like my western light. I'm like, oh my God, if there's anything certain, there's always like your view, it's always changing. Like, what? So I find New York to be like the perfect metaphor for the sandcastle. Like, we're building these sandcastles all the time, but they're temporary and they can break and they can break down. What is certain is that sand, that's what's certain, right? And the sand is always shifting and changing. And I think uncertainties as well is we hook on to that. Oh, I'll only commit if I'm 100% certain about something. Oh, well, guess what? You'll never commit then, because you can't be 100% certain about anything unless you're lying to yourself. I mean, sorry, that's just speaking for myself. But like, I feel like it's okay to commit. You know, there's I think it was like a war statement, like, you don't wait until, you know, to act when you're 100% certain, because then time is of the essence, right? You have what, 60%, 70%, and then you act. I mean, that's a wartime statement, because when sometimes you're waiting for things and you're waiting for like that truth to be revealed, it's already too late. And I think what I am a proponent of is trusting your inner GPS. Your inner guidance system that may not be reflected outside of you. You went against the grain, right? You decided to bet on yourself and bet on your own belief system, right? You didn't have that reflected in greater society. And yet you made that commitment to yourself. So in that way, you're certain about yourself. You can't be certain about everyone else. And I think it's important to recognize that kind of caveat. And again, sometimes we're also not certain about ourselves. We're not 100% okay. Maybe one day we feel 80%. Other days we feel 50%. I think we should give ourselves grace to feel okay in that soup of uncertainty, right? And frankly, think about all the pioneers. If they said, and I wrote this, like, you know, we're living in this world where, you know, we read the review of the restaurant before we book the reservation, and we want to make sure everybody else had that same thing. And of course, if you don't have it, then you're like let down, like, oh my God, it didn't match up to what other people said. Forget that. What about those pioneers who didn't know what was around the corner, right? Did they not explore? Did they say, oh, well, since I don't know, then I'm not certain. I'm not going to explore that. It takes a certain level of curiosity and trust in yourself. You may not trust what's around the corner, but you trust that you can handle it. You trust that you'll figure it out. You'll trust and you're certain that you'll be flexible. And maybe you'll course correct. Maybe you went too far north and you need to redirect yourself. Whatever that is, if you make that jump, allow yourself that ability and that grace to say, you know, today I tried yellow. I didn't like it. Not for me. Let's try blue. That's what each day is for. It's another opportunity for you to try something new for yourself, whatever that is.
Love that. And I think what you're talking about, Colin Powell, I think he had a rule, the 70% rule, which was he wasn't going to wait and sit back and on the sidelines and wait for everything to be perfect. He had a rule for himself that he felt if he had 70% of the information and it was accurate enough and he, you know, did enough risk assessment, he was going to go all in, because he knew to be an effective leader, you have to be decisive and you have to be committed to taking action. And messy action is better than no action at all in general. And maybe if we're not, maybe if you're starting wars, that may not be a good thing. But in general, he's saying, you know, I think that's what you're talking about. And I know you know this, and I've been studying a lot of quantum, the idea of quantum entanglement. And Joe Dispenza goes into a lot of this. And to echo what you're saying, he says, you actually, in order to create something new and possible, you actually have to go into the unknown. And that's uncertainty, baby. That is going into the unknown. And the only way you will actually ever 10X your life and stop living a life that your brain understands is from the past, because it's based on the past, you have to do something unknown. And that's exactly what you're talking about. So I love that.
Thank you. Oh my God. I literally bet on starting this program that I, you know, it's the next level from purgatory to paradise, is claim your paradise, which is helping people create homes that are healing for them. And I ended up getting my certification in quantum biology since my cancer, precisely because, I mean, who does that? There's no kind of like formula for like, okay, well, this is the next thing. I just did it because I believed in it. I listened to my inner GPS and I said, oh my God, what can I learn from a circadian point, because I realized as I was doing the research, a lot of cancers are a result of metabolic disorder, circadian disruption. And I thought, well, now that I have cancer, and again, this is really important to recognize, okay, I'm done now. That's it. I'm going to sit back. No, we have agency. Over 70% of cancers are epigenetic, which is great news. It's great news because that means it's not genetic. It's the result of lifestyle and your environment. And your home is the number one front line of that environment that you're living in. And if you can change certain parts of your home, you can change your health.
Let's dive into deep into that. Bruce Lipton talks about in his book, The Biology of Belief, which is what you're talking about, these epigenetics and exactly what you're talking about. So how does one make a healthy home?
Thank you. And by the way, I quoted him too. He's a great guy. I believe there's two components. There's one, and we can talk about both. There's the pragmatic side of actual materials. Now, I'm a materials consultant. I consult with other firms and I help advise them on using the right materials. But once I already was doing that, but once I had cancer, I was like, oh my God, let's put this through the cancer lens. Let's see what is really, truly good for you. Is it good for you? Like, for example, there's a, you know, certain rugs that are marketed as being pet friendly and stain resistant and washable, and they're killing you. And it's like, why are we sacrificing comfort or our health for convenience? Oh, you can wash it. That's great marketing, by the way. 100% wool is easily washed, is biosustainable, doesn't clog up our environment. Polypropylene sucks on so many levels. It's terrible for your health. You're breathing in the VOCs. You're literally ingesting the nanoparticles from a synthetic carpet. And it's clogging up our earth. It's going to be around long after you're gone. And what's the point? Because you were able to wash it in your washing machine. So that's that kind of real practical aspect. And the other aspect is neuroaesthetics. Now it's so interesting. There's a new study about the correlation between how art has an effect on your nervous system, right? I think beauty has an amazing effect on your physiology, your biology, your nervous system, and that creates and puts you in a parasympathetic state that allows you to heal better. Beauty is healing, and it is a viable healing modality, which is why, yeah, I've been creating beautiful spaces for decades. But now, looking at it through the lens of health, is it truly healthy for you? And I want to say, redefining what beauty means, like for me, I define beauty as divine cellular alignment. In the spirit of Bruce Lipton, that divine intelligence of our cells as a community, as our bodies are an ecosystem, your home is an ecosystem, and your body and your home are communicating with each other all the time. So looking at it from a sensory perspective, looking at it from a spiritual perspective, a scientific perspective, and a practical perspective.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, there's plenty of science to show, and we know this, that if the body is not in a parasympathetic state, meaning a rest and digested state, it cannot heal. And so what you're saying is exactly true. And you can use the neuroaesthetics of your environment that you're in every freaking day. If you can actually bring your nervous system and calm it down or bring up the vibration based on your home, the way it's designed, well, then your nervous system is going to be relaxed. And if your nervous system is relaxed, now you can heal. So I love that you said that. I never even thought of that.
Yeah. And I created what I call rituals of reverence while I was going through cancer treatment, Joel. So for example, you know, during chemo, I wasn't able to eat my mom's, you know, fabulously delicious spicy Pakistani dishes that she was cooking for me. And I used it as an opportunity to bring my best china down, my best silverware. I sprinkled rose petals on my table. I lit a candle and I put a sliced banana on the plate, whatever it is that I could imbibe. And I would go into my garden, take out some violas and put them, the edible pansies, and put them on my plate to dress up my banana. And to create this, you know, I'm drinking water out of a wine glass. So create this beautiful ambiance to allow me to digest what I could digest, right? And so I started doing that naturally with my environment. And now I'm doing workshops at hospitals and other places to help cancer patients create that paradise for themselves, especially while going through treatment, because that's when you need beauty the most, when you're in trauma, right? When you're in that, when your sympathetic state is heightened, when you're in that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response, you can't make good decisions. And so how to get into a relaxed state? Using my senses, grounding into my body. A lot of times people talk about escape and like, oh, I need to escape. And I'm like, no, you need to ground in to your body, especially then. You can't give up on your body. And a lot of times, you know, people feel betrayed by their bodies when they're going through illness. They're like, oh, my body's like, what's it doing? I don't have control. Like, it's betraying me. Like you said with your mom, a chink in the armor, something has infiltrated the system, right?
Yeah.
And I actually have meditations while I'm going through chemo, while I'm going through radiation, while I'm going through physical therapy, all of those things where it's not about an invasion. It's not about betrayal. It's about, let me give you an example. When I was going through chemo, one of the drugs is Taxol. Taxol or Taxotere, which is derived from the Pacific yew tree, which happens to be venerated by many cultures, including the Druids and Greek mythology, as the tree of immortality. Okay. And tree of life, and the physical tree itself can live up to 2000 years and looks really kind of gnarly on the outside, but it's very much alive on the inside. And while I was going through chemo, while my face was swollen, while my hair was falling out, I looked like that tree. And I thought to myself, instead of thinking about the chemo killing cells, what if I'm being infused by that immortal light? What if I'm being infused by that divine wisdom of that tree that has lived for thousands of years? What does it have to teach me? So instead of betrayal, it's about love. It's about loving those cells. It's about saying, hey guys, because our bodies seek homeostasis. And I think your home is a perfect way for you to actively practice your homeostasis.
Yeah. Wow. I was just thinking too, you know, you're talking about sprinkling the rose petals on, slicing the banana a certain way and creating this really like magnificent decoration, this ambiance, if you will, to have a simple lunch or a simple meal. And people might be thinking that's ridiculous. Like, you think that's going to help heal my cancer having thrown some rose petals on? But I'm wondering for you, it sounds like when you did rituals like that, that brought you back into presence, I'm guessing. And you can only be rooted and grounded and in the present moment. If you're in the past or the future, then you're in chaos. I'm curious, was that part of your healing journey and getting using these rituals to bring you back into presence? Like, was that something you ever did in the past? Throwing red rose, like really just savoring the meal and doing this really nice presentation to create that presence.
I mean, I'll be honest, everyone's been, you know, guilty of reading. I used to read a lot of books. I was a bookworm, so I'd have a book in front of me, instead of an iPad. But I think I always practice these. You think about it this way. A lot of people save that for special occasions. Oh, I'm going to sprinkle rose petals on Valentine's Day. Why? Valentine's Day can be every day. Like, self-care can be a natural. It's like a lot of people think self-care is a luxury, you know, like it's only happens at certain times, or you have to spend a lot of money to feel that way. And I come from a really frugal culture. We were rich in so many treasures that I took for granted. And once coming here, I realized, oh my God, that's the answer. These simple things that help ground me, like using scent, right? Using scent is really very much tied to memory. Like certain scents bring you right back in, and using scents, using touch. I love textiles, textures, mohairs, slubs, silk. You know, think about different textures against your skin to help ground you into your space. And lighting, which, oh my God, from a circadian standpoint, it's like that's a whole other rabbit hole. But like candlelight when you're sitting down helps focus you. And we have an ancient biology. If you look at the human existence on this planet as a 24-hour cycle, electricity has only been present for the last 30 seconds. Okay. And so these 23 plus hours of our existence, the only source of light other than sunlight was firelight. And firelight is healing. It's attuned with our biology, and it has the healing. The only natural part of the infrared spectrum that boosts your collagen, helps keep you in and draw you into that parasympathetic state. So I talk about this and doing these types of rituals because that's what I practiced naturally while I was going through cancer. And I thought, why keep this all to myself?
Yeah, so key. I love that. In the book, you talk about how you really, how everyone, when they're building a home or an environment for themselves, utilizing all five senses. And you talk about it in each chapter, kind of how we can do that. And there's so much power. I use a lot of essential, I have essential oils diffusing right now. And they go right into the olfactory nerves, which goes right into the brain. And so you can change your state, you can change your being. So I love that you do that. I wanted to ask you, on the note of quantum biology, what was the biggest aha or something that you learned about our environment that is, and you mentioned it already, like these things like these plastics and VOCs. In your opinion, what is the worst thing that we are putting in our homes right now that is killing us and we have no idea? Most people don't.
I would say that's junk light, Joel. There are studies now that associate the wrong light at the wrong time with breast cancer, including junk light. And I just want to make something clear, and I don't think people realize that the sun has the fullest spectrum of light that our body needs. UV is actually really important for our metabolic health. Okay. It has also been villainized just like cancer. And, you know, most homes have laminated windows and that block certain spectrum of the light, which is terrible. It's actually really bad for you. So sunlight's not polarized. Opening your window, and by the way, as a designer, just to give you a designer's trick that I use for like low ceilings and dark spaces, I would use glossy paint on the ceiling to create that level of expansion. And now that glossy paint I use to create more reflectivity to bring that sunlight in, because you can still benefit from that. And by the way, we have photoreceptors all over our skin, not just our eyes. So that's why even when you wear the red, those blue blocking glasses, your skin is still being exposed and bathed by the blue light of your television. So like, let's really figure out a better system for dealing with the blue light. And I have really simple protocols in my course that helps people create practical, easy, accessible solutions dealing with our modern toxic soup.
That is so good. I love that you said that. And there are studies showing how the light actually connects to the photoreceptors that you're talking about. So even if you had like a blue light, a TV on, but you had the blue blocking glasses, you're still affecting your body. So I love that you said that. I have some lights in my kitchen and all throughout my house that are, I almost went all the way and put red lights in, but during the day, I do need some light. So is there a brand, and I know you can't give away all the secret sauce, but is there a brand, or I just got some brand off of Amazon. I can't remember what they are, but is there a brand of lights that you like that in general, or can you even get them on Amazon, the ones that you prefer? I don't know.
I'm going to be really honest with you, and I've tested this out. LEDs are problematic. They just are. They don't save you that much money. They actually cause, I was talking with another electrician, a high-end electrician about this. And, you know, like the downlights that people install that are completely plastered in that, you know, all that we were talking about, the one percenters that they use. A lot of those homes are far more toxic than the ones that are like, you know, more humble. So I just want to say that. And what happens is it causes more waste, because that whole light fixture has to be trashed once the light goes. So they've tricked us into investing in these things that are temporary. Okay. And halogen and incandescent, even though they emit that heat, they're actually way better for you. So when they made that rule, I went out and stockpiled all the incandescents I possibly could.
I did too.
But like, I would say the number one thing to do is invest in skylights, moonlights, skylights, but like create as much natural light. And I use mirrors to help bring in like a vampire hunter to create more light into dark corners. And that works too. I've even used mirrors perpendicular to the window to increase the view, like for Central Park. You know, someone wanted to have like a bigger, more kind of expanded view. Just designer's tricks that I've used to create more light that are now actually practical. But in terms of actual light, I would go back and start using candles.
Yeah.
I can't really give you one company that I found that is better than the rest. I'm very skeptical, and until I create it for myself, I'll let you know.
No, awesome. Also, one last thing on this piece. Are the people that you work with, are they open? Have you found that they're open to this, or have you just switched completely and you don't even tell them? You just let them know, like, I'm building you a healthy home and these are the lights we're putting in, and you don't get to say.
Well, here's, as I do with anything, I curate options. It's like, you know, dealing with a toddler. Do you want apple juice or orange juice? You give them the two options. Not that I believe in giving toddlers juice, but I just feel like, you know, give them options. Do you want carrot sticks or do you want crackers? So same with my clients. I already have vetted things out. They have their options, but I, being that you're hiring me, I've already done all that legwork and have decades of experience of what works and what doesn't work. So I'm not going to offer you anything that I don't think is going to be, if that is going to be bad for you. Like, yeah. I will always try to find the best option.
I think that's great. And you know, and I know that when I started on my health journey, you know, a decade ago, and for anybody, when I try, I've learned so much. So if I try to meet somebody now who's just starting where I'm at, they can't even grasp it. And so sometimes if we can just get them to nibble on something, or you just feeding them the idea like, hey, I don't know if you knew this, but this junk light is very disruptive. Now you get to do whatever you want, but you having the conversation might be the first time they've ever heard of junk light. So giving them that option and that choice to just at least learn about it, and that curiosity might lead them to coming back to you later and saying, hey, I remember we had a conversation. You know, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. I want to reach back out to you because I know you know about this. So I think that's great. You just give them the options in the beginning and then build that curiosity. And if they want to learn more, they can. We just meet them where they're at.
Exactly. Exactly. I think everyone needs to feel like they have agency, and, you know, that they are making those choices for themselves. And frankly, we're living in a world where, you know, everyone says, oh, everything's toxic. Like, I can't deal with it. Like, you know, don't even start. You know, you're dealing with that person who's so overwhelmed and so saturated by all this alarmist kind of philosophy of like, this is bad, this is bad. And yeah, fear sells all the time and gets you hooked. And, you know, I'm actually not an alarmist. Even though I've been through cancer, I'm not going to say, oh my God, that's horrible for you. I'm going to be like, hey, how about this? This might be the perfect combination. There's a way to frame something where that person doesn't feel so like reactive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I want to talk about your coaching program and some of the other things that you're doing, because you're not only working with the one percenters, which is great news. And you've pivoted after the cancer diagnosis and healed. And could you just kind of talk about some of the exciting projects that you're up to right now?
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, I feel everybody deserves beauty, Joel, not just those who've amassed the wealth to feather their nests. I think it's important that every single person, and I started doing this by leading workshops at the local hospital, and I was approached by, and I was so, it was so humbling and so gratifying at the same time, where people who were terminal, people who couldn't afford, like, what about me? And I thought, oh my gosh, you can have this beauty too. And this kind of misconception that we can't have a beautiful life if we don't have this much X amount in our bank account. And I think, oh my gosh, life is so beautiful. And if I can use my designer's wisdom to help you create beauty that is healing in your home, even shopping your own home. So that's what I started doing. And by the way, I have a gift for your listeners too. It's claimyourparadise.com/podcast. And those are my top three items that I think you can have today and why that will help you create that beauty that is on a biological level and on a spiritual level. So, and it's accessible. So I started doing that. And what I learned in my exploration is, and I'm deeply passionate about this life-death scenario. I believe that even when you're dying, you deserve beauty. You deserve to die with dignity. And so how I started working is I started working and consulting with other providers, and I'm deeply interested in hospital design and creating spaces from a provider side and the patient side. So basically, that line is being blurred right now with the prevalence of so many diseases. This idea that, you know, up until I had cancer, I thought I was living a fairly healthy life. And everyone deserves to be able to create a home that is beautiful and healing. And that's become my whole new purpose.
It's so cool that you're doing that and working in hospitals. I was in a hospital not too long ago and hadn't been in one. I don't go to traditional hospitals pretty much ever, unless it's an emergency. And I was in there in the waiting room and I was looking around and I thought, oh my God, there's nothing but sick people here. This is an institution that just creates, in my opinion, sick people and just continues to create them. And everybody is sick. Now, granted, yes, it's a hospital. That's where you go when you get sick typically. But my point of being is the energy and everybody there. What I'm saying is I want people to go to a hospital where they feel like nourished and they come out better on the other side. And I wasn't seeing that. I just saw a sea of sick people getting sicker. And so I love what you're doing because I think you're really going to change the paradigm for people in the future where they can come into this environment and leave and feel much better.
Oh my God. Think about like those great spas or, you know, a high-end hotel and all the tricks and, you know, of the trade that they use to create that visceral experience. Why not have that in a hospital? Why not? Especially, I feel like when you're feeling not 100% yourself, when you are in a trauma response and you're so in a panic mode, why not bring you into your parasympathetic state and create this cathedral-like, beautiful space that elevates you both physically and mentally?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And just on the note of junk light, hospitals are the worst. And the more I've learned about junk light, our home has completely changed. And when I get into environments, I notice it now. Like I get tired. My eyes are the flicker. I can't see it, but I just know like I get like fatigued and that's the entire hospital. So it's really cool that you're doing that.
Thank you. Oh, one more tip I want to add in terms of light. And I say this for my son now, he is not allowed to look at his phone until he goes out and sees the brightest point in the sky because that's starts the cascade effect. Now, if your junk light is giving you that signal that it's high noon, it F's up your whole metabolic system. So to go outside simply in the morning as you wake up, don't turn on that LED light if you have LEDs, sorry, but to go walk outside or go by the window, open the window if you can't go outside and gaze at the brightest point in the sky, you're actually benefiting your health in more ways than you know, and that's perfectly for free.
I love that. That's a great one. I want to wrap it up and ask you some final round questions, and then we'll let everybody know where they can find you. But so we have a little bit of extra time, so I wanted to ask you some final round questions. Mamash, I'm curious, what were some choices or maybe a choice that you made that made you who you are today?
I made a choice to always stay curious and to explore whatever was coming towards me because I am a student in mythology. And sometimes, you know, the messenger comes to you in a very different form. And, you know, one of these stories where my mom used to tell me was there was a man who was a beggar and he would go from house to house asking for a piece of bread. And most people shut the door. And then this one person let him in and gave him his bread. And then it turned out to be an angel in disguise. So this idea of transformation sometimes comes wrapped in brown paper and not this gold, you know, that can also be false gilding. So the idea of looking at those humble moments of insights and things that are less than perfect and embracing them and saying, come on in.
Love that. Do you have any, I know you have some rituals of reverence, but what are your, you know, I know a lot of people have, you know, 4 a.m., they're up in the morning doing cold baths and then gratitude journals. Do you have any rituals or things that you do on a regular basis?
Yeah. I want to bring in, and we didn't talk about this, is biophilia. So the idea of how our bodies are intrinsically aligned with nature. I create a jungle. I have this tree right here, but I create beautiful scenery and interaction with my plants. So for me, my ritual is to garden, to take care of my plants, and they take care of me. And not just filtering the VOCs, which they do so effectively, but also there are studies showing that during the pandemic, during the epidemic of loneliness, caring for something and caring for a plant actually helps decrease anxiety and depression. So this idea for me, I'm being so personal, is I love my flowers, I love my orchids, I love my roses, and I'm constantly, my hands are dirty, they're in the dirt, I'm all into soil science, so I'm creating that dirt, I'm doing the composting, and I'm creating that paradise for myself.
Yeah, that's so cool. Plants are huge. There's definitely some symbiosis, I think, between humans and plants. I wanted to ask you if there's any books. I'm a big reader. Is there any set of books, like 1 to 3 books or a book that just empowered you and made you think different and changed your life that you'd say, you should go out and read this, somebody else?
Well, I think I cite The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I really love, again, in that it's a short read, it's allegorical, and it's also about self-trust, about the shepherd who has to trust in himself. And that idea of, there's that moment in Tangiers, which I've also been in those streets with him, when he loses all his money, and then he has to make a decision whether he's a victim of a thief or he's an adventurer on his quest. And like him, I decided to be an adventurer on my quest. And so any book that deals with you really honing into your own hero's journey, where you have agency and you are that explorer, that adventurer, is a book I would recommend. So that's a big one.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mawish Saeed, you are a force to be reckoned with and are a world changer. I appreciate you so much. Let people know where they can find you, connect with you either on social media or reach out to you. And I don't know if they know this, but I didn't realize you don't just work with people in New York and the one percenters. You actually work all around the world. So maybe also tell people about that, and if they want to learn more about your coaching program and some of the stuff that you're doing with hospitals and cancer.
Thank you. My coaching program, my education hat is claimyourparadise.com. My interiors is msd-ny.com. And you can find me on Instagram, which is where I'm most active. And that's mawish_syed_designs. And I really enjoyed this conversation, Joel. And thank you so much for having me and for allowing me to share my wisdom with you.
Thank you. We appreciate you. So thank you so much.